Beasley Media Group, BMI, and HD Radio present 100 Years of Radio, 100 Years of Hitmakers, where we celebrate a century of rock radio hits written by some of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Hey, I'm Brian Ives. I'm the managing editor of Beasley Media, and I'm hosting a series of interviews with some of rock music's biggest songwriters, and we're digging deep talking about some of their most iconic songs. This week, we're talking to Brent Smith of Shinedown. This conversation went on for so long, we actually spoke twice. And you guys may not know this, or maybe you do, Shinedown has more number one songs on rock radio than any band ever. Atlas Falls became their 16th number one. We didn't talk about all 16 of their number ones, but we talked about a lot of their biggest songs, and Brent was just a great guy to talk to, very open about the process and the effects of the songs and everything. So let's just get into it. Brent, thank you for being with us today. So let's just start by talking about Atlas Falls, your latest number one. Talk about writing the song, what is it about, and how it feels to still be scoring huge radio hits nearly two decades after you guys started out.
So Atlas Falls was actually written during the Amaryllis writing sessions for that record, which was our fourth album. And, you know, why that song is now coming to the light of day has a lot to do with COVID-19. And 5 months ago, in the beginning of the pandemic, we were all thrusted into a new world. And for me personally, I was trying to figure out a way to put optimism out into the world and also to help the medical and the scientific community during this time of crisis, because they were the ones that were battling and are still battling this virus. So I came across an organization called Direct Relief. They are a charity organization. They're the Calvary. Their main goal is to make sure that the men and women in the medical community, scientific community during times of crisis, whether it be poverty, a natural disaster, or a pandemic, that they give these men and women the tools they need to save as many lives as possible. So once we had finally contacted them and we found our liaison, a gentleman by the name of Samir, I gave him the idea of I had a song that I wanted to attach to a T-shirt. The name of the song was called Atlas Falls, and we wanted to give 100% of the proceeds to Direct Relief in aiding them during this pandemic, for which we are closing in on almost $400,000 raised since March of this year. So I have to preface Atlas with that because it's very important why the song came out in the first place. I just saw all the fear in people's eyes, and I wanted to put something out into the world. The band did, myself and Zach and Barry and Eric. We wanted to show optimism. We wanted to show encouragement, confidence, and we wanted to put something out there that was a beacon of the human spirit. And I always loved the song. When we were writing for the album Amaryllis, we write a lot of songs for records. This was a song that didn't make the album, not because it wasn't a good song. It's just at the time, I guess it just didn't necessarily belong on that particular record. I felt like the song would see the light of day eventually. I didn't realize it was going to be to this magnitude. But the dynamic of that song, especially when we wrote it, it was about just that. It was about overcoming obstacles. It was about having confidence in yourself and just refusing to kneel to the walls.
Atlas Falls seems to continue a long lyrical theme in your songs about not backing down and just sort of transcending the situation that you find yourself in.
You know, we've often said that a lot of Shinedown music is about the yin and the yang. It's why we named the band Shinedown in the first place. Sometimes you shine, sometimes you're down. It's the yin and the yang. Everything that's good has a little bit of bad, and everything that's bad has a little bit of good. It's balance. And, you know, Atlas really is a definition of that. And we didn't necessarily expect it to arrive where it has, but I think that it's become an anthem for a lot of people, and it does have a possibility of being our 16th rock radio number one of 27 singles that have been released by Shinedown in the last almost two decades. Here we are with a song that all we really hope for the song and for people is that it gives them their confidence and is a force of encouragement.
So Fly From The Inside was your first single, and it's the lead-off song from Shinedown's debut, Leave A Whisper. It's got a lyrical theme about not letting people tell you what to do and not letting people sort of tell you that you won't succeed at your dreams. You know, I'm guessing based on stuff that you've said before, Some of this could have been inspired by your first experience with getting signed to Atlantic Records and then dropped before getting re-signed and starting Shinedown. So talk about that.
Yeah, the signing and then the dropping and then the re-signing was very unique. I was signed to Atlantic Records over 2 decades ago with another band, and that lasted in a demoing process for about 9 months. I was dropped by Atlantic Records, and then I was called back by the A&R, which is a gentleman by the name of Steve Robertson at Atlantic Records, who is still Shinedown's A&R to this day. And he called me back about 2 weeks after essentially dropping the band that I was in, and he said, I want to re-sign you to a different deal. It's a development deal. And the idea was to give me the tools that I needed in regards to just writing with as many songwriters as possible and seeing. Steve believed that I was a songwriter. I just wasn't around the type of individuals that could help me hone it. So I signed the deal, and then 3 years later, we created Shinedown. So Fly From The Inside was the very first single. I think that it's very fitting that it was because, you know, the main line in the song is I found a way to steal the sun from the sky. Long live that day that I decided to fly from the inside. And people have asked me, like, what does that mean? And flying from the inside just means you just believe you can accomplish anything. You believe you can fly. You believe you can steal the sun from the sky. It is just this song of pure determination. And, you know, and at the time, you know, going back 20 years, a good friend of mine once told me, he said, you will get your entire life to write and record your first album. You'll get about to maybe 3 months to record your next one if your first one is successful. So Fly From The Inside was the very first single. We released 4 singles off of Leave a Whisper, but that was a huge moment for me. And yeah, I still look on that song very, very fondly.
Was Fly On The Inside the first time you heard yourself on the radio? And, you know, what did that feel like?
So funny enough, it was the first major label record that I was on that I heard my song on the radio. So yeah, when I was in Knoxville, Tennessee, where I grew up, we actually had a pretty solid rock scene, independent radio, pirate radio, if you will, college radio. So a lot of alternative music was in my area as I was growing up. And I was in a lot of local bands, and they would have on certain radio stations, they'd have locals night either on Saturday or Sunday night. So I've heard, you know, myself on the radio in the bands that I was in locally. But the first time I nationally heard myself, yeah, it was Fly From The Inside. I was in Jacksonville. I was on the interstate. Needless to say, I was massively excited when I heard it for the first time.
Save Me was your first number one single. So talk about that song. Talk about how you felt when it topped the rock charts.
When Save Me became the number one song for us, it was a huge holiday gift because it was during December. It actually had become number one on rock radio, active, mainstream, and it was the first alternative number one that we had had at radio. So we had 3 number ones, number one with one song, but on 3 different charts. And I just remember being in awe of that whole time frame because, like I said a little while ago, too, you know, if your first record is successful, you're not going to get as much time to do your second one, which I think we got into the studio, got it written, recorded, and we were back out on the road with our second album within 6 months. It was really fast, actually. I can't recall who was in the chart at that point in time. I just remember I was overwhelmed that we were number one on 3 charts.
Devour from Sound of Madness was another number one single. What did you write it about? I remember hearing it was about the president at the time. And, you know, were you hesitant to sort of go that political with a song?
The symbolism of that song at the time, because you got to remember this was 2007, 2008 when the record was released and when the song came out. At the time, George W. Bush, you know, now that I look back on it, you know, I'm older and I can really look at the angst of where I was at that point in time. You learn as you get older what was actually going on at the time. My biggest thing was just I wanted to see our troops get out of areas that I didn't feel like we needed to be in anymore. And I felt like the president at the time was holding that up. And that was kind of the angst in Devour, that I was kind of explaining it from a soldier's point of view of the frustration of continuing to being in an area that we just didn't belong in anymore. So it's more frustrating than anything. Not to mention, we do a lot with the military in all four branches. We do it because we love these men and women, and Devour was kind of an anthem for them in a lot of different ways.
You know, and the song later got licensed a few times. How did it feel knowing that your song was being used on like ESPN and in video games?
And that was kind of the initial beginning stages of our relationship with ESPN, our relationship with sporting events, all kinds of sporting events, video games, etc. All of a sudden, we just started getting a lot more opportunities with our music. But to be totally honest with you, the record, The Sound of Madness, there was a big leap forward from Leave a Whisper and Us and Them, the second album, to The Sound of Madness. This is where Rob Cavallo came in as producer. This is when I met Dave Bassett, who is a huge part of the songwriting process for Shinedown still to this day. He's kind of the fifth member of the band in the studio. Yeah, a lot of things started to change on that record, and it was just a better record.
Bully has become kind of an anthem. Talk about what inspired that song. And, you know, I've seen on YouTube, I'm sure lots of your fans have, high school marching bands doing their rendition of Bully. What did it feel like to see and hear that?
The marching band covering it was really, really cool. The interesting thing about that song is it got played with a bunch of marching bands, actually. They just kind of picked up on that song. But listen, the inspiration of that song was something at the time. This was released in 2012. This was in the early phase of like when the internet was crossing over from like message boards on websites into these new apps like Twitter, and, you know, MySpace was starting to kind of fade out. And on top of that, too, Facebook was coming into the fold. So there was just a lot of videos all of a sudden of kids getting bullied. And I remember the media kind of used a platform of saying that bullying was an epidemic, not only in America, but just globally, because of the rise of social media and what have you. The thing about Bully for us was that we looked at it as it's not an epidemic. Bullying's been going on since the dawn of man, woman, however you want to look at it. The thing about Bully, our song, was we weren't necessarily taking the initiative of saying that it was okay to let the bully continue abusing you or try to ignore the bully, because sometimes you're just not going to be able to do that. And yes, a lot of times the bully is the one that's being bullied the most. But the reality is that that song is about, listen, if you are coming into my personal space and you are mentally or physically attacking me, then I'm going to attack you back. But you have to stand up for yourself. That song was about not turning the other cheek. It was about standing up for yourself and not allowing people to run over you. And to this day, I think that song, you know, it holds a lot of weight with people because it is defiant in the idea and the knowledge of we want people to know that they're necessary and that they're worth a lot. And this world needs them. I think that Bullies are really... it's an important song because it's a song, yet again, where we want the listener to have as much confidence as possible in themselves.
Okay, so Second Chance, that's another number one single, is probably your most well-known song. What did you write it about?
So that song was about a moment in time with my mother and my father. My entire life, from pretty much birth, what I do today is what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to sing. I always wanted to be a songwriter, but I always wanted to be a performer. So growing up in my town, it was just looked at as something that was just completely unattainable, like it wasn't realistic. But I always had this passion. It's a part of who I am. A good friend of mine once told me that you don't pick the music picks you. And I really do believe that. But I just remember, you know, I was signed to Atlantic Records out of Tennessee to a different band in the very beginning. I was dropped and then I was re-signed to a development deal. And that's what took me on the journey to essentially form and create Shinedown. The second I was re-signed, I was off. Like I was on a plane literally the next day. I'll never forget it either. It was 2 days after 9/11 is when I got on the plane to go to Los Angeles for the first time. But I remember sitting at my parents' kitchen table in the house that I grew up in, my mother looked at me and said, I can't try to tell you that I understand this life that you want for yourself. If you stay here, you're never going to be fulfilled. And we know that. And we want you to go, but we want you to win. I'll never forget the fact that she said that to me. Go out and win. Whatever it is you're looking for, whatever it is you're searching for, don't, you know, I talk about having a plan B and about the fact that you don't need to have one. Don't have a plan B. Whatever your A plan is, do that. And I remember my mom saying, good luck. I'm going to love you no matter what, but win. And my father echoed that. And really, my goodbye wasn't this goodbye like I'll never see you again or, you know, that's it type of thing. It was, that was my second chance. I was signed and then I was dropped and then I was called back a month later by the same A&R and he said, I want to give you a development deal. And I didn't know what that meant, but what it meant was it was going to take me on a journey. Sometimes goodbye is a second chance. And I'm still on that journey and I'm very grateful for it. So that's where the song comes in. And that's what the song's meaning is about, that goodbye when you leave the nest or when you leave, you know, where you grew up or what have you. That's not necessarily a bad thing. You have to go out into the world. It's a big, beautiful, beautiful, bold world.
Talk about the process of having it remixed for different formats. You know, like, did you mind doing that? Did you mind having the song changed to get played in different places? How is the concept of having your song remixed introduced to you?
The remixes of Second Chance, because it was a multi-formatted song, meaning it was a hit on a lot of formats. It was number one on active rock and mainstream rock. It was number one on alternative radio. It reached number one on Hot AC, spent like 11, 6, something. I can't remember exactly how many weeks. It spent a lot of time at number one on the Hot AC chart. And then it went all the way to number two, Billboard Top 200 and Top 40. We couldn't for the life of us. We were only like 30 spins away from beating the Black Eyed Peas. But it's okay, because when Casey Kasem signed off the air for the last time, it's probably the most legendary DJ in North America. The number one song in the country was Second Chance, and he signed off the air to that. It's pretty amazing. You can still look that up on YouTube. You know, look, for pop radio, they wanted to pull the guitars down a little bit because there's some, you know, there's still distorted guitars and what have you. I think they put a little bit more volume on the vocal, but that was really it. They stayed true to the song.
A lot of bands notice a big difference in their audience after they have such a big hit. You know, did you start to see new people come into the shows?
There was a young man in 2010, like early 2010. He was probably 22 years old. And I remember he found me backstage. I just thought it was interesting because he said, I just want to tell you that the album, The Sound of Madness, top to bottom, meant a great deal to him. But he prefaced it by saying that basically he hadn't spoken to his mother in over 2 years. They had a falling out with each other and what have you. But when The Sound of Madness album came out, he found her and knocked on the door. She answered the door. Hadn't seen each other in 2 years. He said, all I want you to do is get in the car with me right now and go for a drive. I don't want you to say anything. I just want you to listen. And so she did. So she gets in the car and he plays the entire Sound of Madness record to her because he felt that that album had a lot to do with where he was at and what he wanted to tell his mother, that the songs related so much to what was going on in both of their lives. But when it got to Second Chance was the moment, and that's an earlier song in the album, but they didn't speak to each other. He just drove her around to listen to the record, but she was obviously very touched when that song came on and they listened to the entire record. And he said he drove her back home and they just held on to each other for like 30 minutes and they were able to start their relationship over again as, you know, a mother and a son, and kind of hit the reset button. And the album was one of those things that helped them be able to do that. But this Second Chance was a big part of just, you know, whatever had happened in their relationship, they were able to let it go and move on and start over again as mother and son. I always thought that was an amazing story.
Brent, thank you so much. It's been so great to talk to you.
100 years of radio, 100 years of hitmakers.
Hey, next week we've got another interview coming up. It's Nick Furlong, and even if you guys don't know the name, you definitely know his songs. He's co-written a ton of stuff with Papa Roach, including American Dreams, Elevate, Who Do You Trust, Help. He also co-wrote Fever 333's Made in America, if you guys know that song. So we will see you next week. Take care, guys.